Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 6th of September, because Labor Day was yesterday and we were off being labor-free, and we hope that most of you were as well. We decided that we do, because it's getting pretty close to the election, that we would have an All Things Political on Tuesday instead of on Monday, because we weren't here on Monday. So it is the time of year when people start paying attention to this presidential race and other races. It's the beginning of a two-month sprint to Election Day, and we have an election with historically low approval ratings among voters for the two candidates who are on top of the ticket on the Republican side and the Democratic side. We'll be talking about where the polls are. It would indicate that Donald Trump is gaining a bit of ground. The poll from most recent CNN shows that he has a little bit of a lead. Are these polls things that we should be paying close attention to? Is it a tightening race, do you think? We have a lot to talk about this hour. We'll be looking at that, and we'll be looking at third-party candidates and who those candidates would be taking votes from. We'll talk about Donald Trump's appearance in Detroit. We'll talk about his immigration speech some, and we are going to be speaking with a supporter of Donald Trump the first part of this hour. Ed Pozzali is with us, president of Florida-based firm Tripp Scott. He was the co-chair of Jeb Bush for governor, and he also served as a member of the Bush-Cheney legal team in the 2000 presidential recount litigation. He's an active member of the Republican Party, served as the chair of the Republican Party in Broward County, Florida. Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Orrin Cass, who's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He was domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, and we are going to be welcoming phone calls. So we're particularly interested in hearing from Trump supporters the first part of this hour, and from everybody. I'm just calling out to Trump supporters. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hello, Ed. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. You have said, Ed, in some TV appearances that I was watching, that Donald Trump should be focusing on the economy, on Hillary Clinton, and on keeping us safe. Why do you think he should focus on that, and has he veered from that too often for your liking?
Well, it's not a question of veered for it, but I think it resonates with the voters. It's still the economy. Whether it's Wisconsin or Florida or California or New York, it's still the economy. And people want to know that the American dream and the opportunity to pursue economic freedom in our country is alive and well. And some of the policies that we've have experienced over the 8 years under President Obama and continuation, according to Hillary Clinton, that would be a Clinton presidency, is in stark contrast to what I think would be experienced under a President Trump. So I think that small businesses are a key, and giving them economic freedom from unnecessary regulation, providing a rational tax schematic that allows for monies that are currently offshore to be brought back on, and to make the United States more competitive in the world market, and to drive a greater and greater both growth in the economy and jobs for Americans across the country. I think if he sticks to those messages, he has a real opportunity to win.
You talk about unnecessary regulation. I've heard that phrase before. What are the regulations that are unnecessary?
Well, I'll share with you. I think Obamacare has been a major failure. In my state, in Florida alone, we've experienced a 40% or 42% increase in premiums in anticipation of Obamacare being fully implemented. We've had across the country, including Florida and Wisconsin as an example, they've had major medical insurance providers drop out of the program, further narrowing the choice for the public and consumers and patients around how, you know, the doctor groups and the available insurance policies available. And so the math of Obamacare simply does not work And so that's certainly one major piece of what I believe is unnecessary regulation. A second piece, another example, would be the Keystone Pipeline. That was regulated to death. And so we had an opportunity to create good-paying jobs in the heartland of our country in a sorely needed pipeline between Canada and Mexico to move oil and gas through the system. And we failed to take it because unnecessary environmental regulations killed that job-making opportunity, and we missed that sorely. Lastly, you see more and more discussion by Hillary Clinton, as an example, that not only do we need a Family Leave Act, we need a higher minimum wage, we also need additional benefits to people. Again, all of those things taken in total, not that any one of those things gives anybody major angst, but it's more and more requirements on small business particularly, and it provides for additional regulations on businesses that ultimately cost the consumer big money and costs people jobs. So when a small business person says, hey, I have a choice between hiring five more people, oh, but wait a second, I have to consider this regulation, I have to consider Obamacare, I have to consider this regulation, I may not be able to fire them, I have to pay them a certain amount of money. And so even though it might be beyond the marketplace, and so bottom line is that small business owner says, I'm not going to hire five people, maybe I'll hire just one.
Let's talk about environmental regulations for a moment. We had a very disturbing and quite large earthquake in Oklahoma over the weekend, and some have been saying, and they put sort of a moratorium on digging wells, et cetera. They are wondering whether or not it's associated with fracking. Isn't this maybe a situation where we allowed a certain kind of activity to continue that may have resulted in an earthquake that now is causing a reexamination of an environmental policy that maybe we should have looked at before fracking was expanded?
Well, you're talking about supposition on top of hypotheses. I mean, so if you're telling me that someone is going to say that was a fact and that's what caused the earthquake, which has not been proven, what I would say as an example, let me give you a kind of what I consider to be reasonable regulation. I don't have a problem with a state like Florida, as an example, saying, hey, look, we don't want you drilling off of our shores because we have an economic investment both in tourism, a lifestyle investment based upon where we live around the beach and around beaches, and an environmental investment into ensuring that our beaches remain pristine. I think those are legitimate conversations when someone that's as opposed to saying, well, you know, we're having more hurricanes and therefore we have to stop doing X. I'm not so sure about that. What I am more sure of is that the regulations need to be reasonable, and it just should not be a power grab by Washington. Determination of those kinds of things is best left up to locals that can assess the situation and understand what the impacts are both on the economy and on the environment. And I think that appropriate balance is best left to those who have to gain the benefit of the environment, environmental nature of what you're talking about. I'm not even going to address the Oklahoma situation because that's pure speculation in my mind.
Let's talk just a little bit more about jobs. It certainly has been an undercurrent of this campaign. It's obvious that there are a lot of Americans who have not fared very well since the recession. They do need jobs that pay more money. Tell me more about Donald Trump's plans for good-paying jobs in this country. What kinds of jobs is he talking about? Does he need to be more detailed about that?
Well, I mean, one of the elements of Donald Trump's job plan is to unleash the American energy industry. If you look at, we now have the technology to extract coal out of the ground in a environmentally sensitive and clean way. We now have the ability to extract natural gas and use natural gas in a way that makes both economic and environmental sense. I think it also benefits us to be energy independent from places like the Middle East. And so we can be the new energy driver in the world if we we're able to pull back on what I believe is job killing regulation. So that's the first part of it. Secondly, is that you see our corporate tax plan needs to be lowered so that this is the reverse of companies actually leaving. They don't necessarily leave the United States, but the money leaves the United States and goes to places like, you know, Ireland and the EU and other places. And that's solely because of our tax corporate tax plan. That needs to be lowered so that money comes back into the United States and is used to develop both manufacturing jobs as well as other high-paying jobs with those, with that kind of money that's reinvested back into jobs for America. And then the third piece is I do think our economy would benefit from a full addressing of legal immigration that would allow for the United States to make its judgments on who should come in and why, and create a legal process, a legal immigration process that controls our border. I think those are things that are important, and those would grow the economy. The plan that Donald Trump has laid out would provide a 4% growth plan, as opposed to what we're experiencing now, which is nearly flat growth for several last quarters.
Do you think that it is wise, when we look at polls that show how interested and how important Americans think immigration is when it comes to major concerns, only 9% of Americans are terribly worried about immigration. Donald Trump has made this a centerpiece, certainly of his campaign, the meeting in Mexico with the president, and then the very fiery speech that he gave in Arizona. Is it wise for him to continue along this path? Is he going to gain more voters by talking more about immigration?
Well, I think that the key there is immigration and a comprehensive securitization of our border and greater controls as to not only who gains entry to the United States, but when they're here and overstayed, and how we track those who are here legally and then maybe overstay their welcome, at least according to the process. I think some of those things can tie into two other much bigger issues and much greater concerns rather than just plain immigration. That kind of speaks to the poll. The first has to do with economics. The economy is impacted by having an appropriate legal immigration program, as well as protecting our jobs through different trade agreements, and he's addressed some of that. That also has to do with that. That's an impact. And then the second kind of thrung as to what impacts people's concern about immigration is feeling secure and securitizing our border. We have a right as a sovereign nation to securitize our border and to protect our citizens from those who would harm us, who come in from the outside of our country, whether they're illegal immigrants or whether they're legal immigrants, frankly. Frankly, if they're, even if they're citizens, let's face it, you know, we don't want to, you don't want to walk out of your studio and get knocked over the head. But the bottom line is that we can certainly control our border. And so when we had illegal immigrants committing crimes, they need to be sent back and kept out of our country because they've proven to be somebody who cannot live within the laws of the United States, first by definition of being an illegal immigrant, and then secondly, violating our law through some sort of criminal activity.
Yeah. Do you think he overstated that criminal activity? The fact checkers said that he way overestimated how many crimes are committed by people who are not here legally.
Well, I mean, look, you know, He may have, I don't know, but what I would say is this: you can, if you or I lost a loved one to someone who committed a crime, and they happened to be an illegal immigrant, I'm not so sure those facts matter much, because the number one priority of government is to protect its citizenry, and I think that that is a priority that people understand, both from a security issue dealing with terrorism or a simple security issue of letting bad guys in our border, whether they're terrorists or whether they're just criminals.
Yeah, but facts do matter. If we're thinking that a whole lot of immigrants are here and they're about to do us harm and that's not true, it's important to know it's true, isn't it?
Well, I think it's important. If I think it's particularly sensitive. Those are sensitive issues around folks who live in the southwest section of our country. It is, it's easy to be, in all fairness, to those who live like in Kansas, to not understand completely the nature of whether or not legal immigrants or illegal immigrants and how they affect their economy. I mean, I'm not so sure they're impacted a whole lot by any of that. But if you live in Florida, we have experienced tremendous benefit of immigration, particularly from Central and South America and from Cuba. Miami, the city of Miami is an example, is a shining example of a city that has tremendously benefited from legal immigration over the years. And Miami has developed into an international city over the last 40 years, primarily because of the energy and efforts of legal immigrants. So you need to separate that from what I think Donald Trump is trying to address.
We're going to go to a few phone calls for you, and here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Ed Pozzoli is president of the Florida-based law firm Tripp Scott. He has served as chair of the Republican Party in Broward County, Florida, co-chair of the Jeb Bush for governor, and he is a Donald Trump supporter, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. Our number, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. Saeed in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Kathleen, when I think about our national public life right now, I cannot point to one thing that's working. We have 8 years of economic growth less than 2%. Historically low labor participation rates. We have national debt that has grown to be almost to the point of no return. Our foreign policy is a disaster. We have created, our foreign policy has created a crisis of immigration. They're one out of every 120 people living on the face of the earth now is a displaced person. We have vacated the moral high ground in our foreign policy in our negligence of the Syrian genocide. We have created a immigration crisis that is breaking Europe up right now. Talk about domestic policy, Obamacare is an abject failure. There are more people choosing to pay the penalty than are signing up. Providers have left the exchanges. Prices are going up. There is nothing in our national public life that is working. So why would a sane person want a continuation of this?
Ed, your response.
Well, I think the caller hits it right on the head. He should be your guest. I mean, I think he hit it exactly on the head. Let me add two key points. Home ownership, which is an element of the American dream, is at its lowest point in 50 years. And participation in the workforce in America is also at its lowest point in some 40 years. And so what you're seeing is basic elements of the American dream being impacted over the last 8 or so years, and I think that it's time for us to recognize that we must change the way our government treats the people. And so what you're seeing, and you saw on both sides of the fence, on both Republicans and in the attractiveness of someone like an outsider like Donald Trump, and you saw it in the same way in the Democrats expressing themselves through their support of Bernie Sanders, who, let's face it, was essentially outside the system, was an obscure senator from the small state of Vermont, and really was an avowed socialist. They were looking for something different. And so what you have in this race is essentially the quintessential establishment candidate in Hillary Clinton and the quintessential outsider candidate in Donald Trump. And if you want things to remain the same or a continuation of the same, then vote for Hillary Clinton. And on the other hand, if you want things to change, Donald Trump is your vote.
There are a number of people, Ed, who have concerns about the character of Donald Trump, and I need to ask you about this. I don't know if you saw Charles Blow's column yesterday in the New York Times, but it was particularly hard-hitting, and I'd like for your response on this because people have said this about Donald Trump. You were a chief birther against President Obama. You've maligned Mexicans and slandered Muslims. You've treated women with disdain. You've mocked the handicapped. You've displayed a staggering lack of basic knowledge about governance. You have applauded dictators. You have encouraged the assault of protesters at your rallies. Are those fair criticisms of him?
Well, let's deal with one at a time. What is those characterizations are just that. They're not really based on fact. I'll share with you, with respect to Mexicans, the discussion has always been about those who come across the border and commit crimes, gangs and drug running, primarily through Mexico, along our southwest border, has been a tremendous impact and destabilized both the American Southwest and the Mexican corresponding area right over the border. That was something you saw agreement on when Donald Trump went to meet the president of Mexico. Second, with respect to Muslims, there is not a discussion on Muslims. There's a question as to this. It's not an assault on a religion. It's an assault on a portion of the religion that is extremist and that wants to create or destroy wants to create something different and destroy the American lifestyle. In that viewpoint, how is that being discriminatory? That is simply pointing out a problem that there is a small minority of those in the Muslim religion that want to destroy the American way of life. That is just a fact. And so when we have to face up to that fact, is it a fact that is a good fact that exists in the world? The answer is no. But at the very least, Donald Trump stood up and spoke the truth about what is going on, and that we have to face these facts, whether they're difficult to face or whether they're easy to face. This one happens to be a difficult one. And so I don't see that being something that is discriminatory. I think that we have every right to protect ourselves. If you look at what's going on in Germany as an example, the fear is not being humanitarian. You want to be humanitarian and take the Syrian refugees. But if, in fact, however number of percent of those Syrian refugees are essentially ISIS or extreme terrorists, then that's going to encourage that kind of behavior, and you've seen some of those examples in Germany, then I think we have every right to protect ourselves, to require some level of background check. To come into our country should be a privilege, and once we recognize that, then that privilege has to come with a certain set of responsibilities. Some of those responsibilities include having allegiance to become an American and to what it means to be an American and to buy into the American dream. I gave you an example of the city of Miami. When Cubans came over from Castro's Cuba, when they fled Castro's Cuba, there was an alignment as to why they came over. They came over for their piece of the American dream, and they have developed Miami into a wonderful city. It's a tremendous international city. That is the benefit of immigration. On the other hand, if they came over and wanted to change and did not buy into the American dream and wanted to destroy our lifestyle, then that would be something totally different. And that's what we need to be able to ferret out.
Let's take one more call for you. It's Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have an issue with the fact that, he sounded very positive on fossil fuels and opening up the safeguards for the environment. Leaving it like an open book. And the thing of it is, these companies that are doing the fracking and the coal mining and all that stuff, they have to look at the environmental issues, too. They want to throw that out the book, and basically if they throw the environmental issues out, what's going to happen? Those safeguards are gone. There's going to be people all over the place who are going to have contamination everywhere. And the Keystone Pipeline, all right, but they got that other pipeline coming through the Dakotas right now through Indian country. The Sioux are protesting all of this because the results of this same company that has done the pipeline before has left environmental hazards.
Ed.
Well, I would ask the caller to look back on the Alaskan pipeline. There was a great deal of controversy when that was put in, and that has been a tremendous success, both in providing energy, the natural transportation of energy, but as well as from an environmental, a minimal impact on the environment there. I would also suggest to you that to move oil from Canada to Mexico across our, you want to talk about carbon footprint. The studies show that there's a greater carbon impact when you move fossil fuels via truck or by rail as opposed to pipeline. So there's some of those things. On the other hand, I will also share with you that technology has come a long way, both from a fracking minimal impact standpoint on our environment as well as coal. The technology on coal scrubbers have basically taken the risks away from the environmental impact on developing coal. But there seems to be in Washington a push to move towards something else. Don't get me wrong. Listen, I live in Florida. I appreciate sunshine, and I appreciate clean water, and I appreciate pristine beaches. I mean, I live in Fort Lauderdale, which is between the Everglades, which provides me with clean water, and I live, you know, right near the beach, which is a tremendous both economic and, you know, environmental. I appreciate the environmental nature of it. But we have to have reasonable and responsible regulation, and those need to be left to the states with some oversight by the federal government. But let's be honest, we now have the growth of regulation that is choking our economy and is choking our ability to enjoy what we have. And so some of those things, you destroyed industries on top of industries in states like West Virginia simply because of, in my view, the unintelligible regulation that was imposed that virtually choked every single coal company out of business.
The polls today, CNN is showing that Donald Trump has a slight lead. The polls show that the race is narrowing. Wisconsin polls show that. Just a final question for you, Ed. What states do you think Donald Trump really has to win that you'll be looking at? And why do you think it's becoming a closer race? Would you agree that it is?
Well, I agree that it's becoming closer. There are three factors. One is it naturally gets closer as people start focusing in on the race because we live in a country that is basically divided between Republican and Democrat. Secondly, you have a tremendous overhang, death by a thousand cuts, or should I say death by a thousand emails. This controversy over Hillary Clinton's email situation, as well as the Clinton Foundation pay-for-play allegations, all cause people to confirm their view that, you know, some 70% of people don't trust her. And so that's certainly an overhang and is causing depression in her numbers. I also believe there's a third thing going on, that Donald Trump is being viewed more and more as an acceptable alternative to Hillary Clinton, and they can actually begin viewing or envisioning Donald Trump in the White House. And so those are three things that are going on. The states that I see that are going to be, in fact, you know, obviously Ohio and Florida clearly are the two main states, but I think for purposes of Trump, Wisconsin becomes a key state. There's a very strong governor there, and Scott Walker, and Paul Ryan obviously is from there. But you also have states like Michigan and Pennsylvania that are in play because of the economy and folks who have not really enjoyed any of the recovery, the economic recovery. I think those are important states. We also have some states out west in Nevada and Arizona and some in Colorado. And I think if I gave you, I probably missed one or two, but those are then four or five or six states that are ultimately going to decide this election. I do think it's going to be close. There'll be some impact on the debate, in the debate a couple weeks from now. But I would suggest that your voters consider this. When do we expect to have Hillary Clinton ever admit to having done anything wrong with respect to these emails? And how can we trust her? And ultimately, when someone takes a hammer to a lawyer, when someone takes a hammer to a BlackBerry, I don't know what more you need to understand about intent of wanting to destroy whatever was contained on that BlackBerry. And so when did we become so tolerant of someone's behavior as to put up with that kind of thing and then provide them the awesome power or reward that bad behavior with elevating them to the awesome power of the presidency? That would be the question I'd ask.
All right, Ed. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Ed Pozzoli, he is a Trump supporter, president of the Tripp Scott Law Firm in Fort Lauderdale. He also is an active member of the Republican Party, served as chair of the Republican Party in Broward County, Florida, and was an integral member of the Bush-Cheney legal team in the 2000 presidential recount litigation. We're going to continue. Phone call is still applicable. We're just switching guests here because Ed couldn't stay with us for the full hour. Orrin Cass will be joining us, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, who is domestic policy director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, and he will be joining us momentarily. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, we move on. We'll get to your phone calls, I promise you. We just are introducing a new guest. Orrin Cass is now with us, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Orrin, thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So is this race getting tighter?
It's probably getting a little bit tighter, but the polls that I think everyone's excited about at the moment are especially bad ones. You know, there's this huge new Washington Post poll that was taken online over a long period of time. There's the CNN one that was also done over Labor Day weekend. So I think it's important not to look at any single poll and say, well, suddenly everything has changed, because rarely does that happen.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has agreed, unless there is a natural disaster, he said, to three debates. Are those going to be pivotal? And I would imagine a lot of people are going to be watching those.
I think they should probably do them pay-per-view. There's going to be people watching them.
Right.
You know, it's certainly possible that one will be pivotal. I think for it to be pivotal, it has to change people's minds from what they thought before. If you think back to 2012 in the first debate, when I think pretty unanimously everyone agrees Mitt Romney beat Barack Obama pretty badly, that was important because it suddenly changed the way people were thinking about the two candidates. There they were actually standing next to each other, and it turned out the caricature that Obama had been projecting about Romney didn't hold up to reality. So if you see a moment like that, if Donald Trump actually beats Hillary Clinton in the debate, for instance, that could certainly be pivotal in one direction. If he melts down and shows himself completely incapable of behaving on national television, that could be pivotal in the other direction. But if it goes the way people probably expect it to, which is that, you know, Trump does some outlandish things, Clinton obviously argues the policy a lot better, then you're probably not going to change a lot of minds from what people thought going in.
Mm-hmm. He's been doing some unusual things lately, and put yourself inside his head, if possible, to try and explain this. The whole appearance in Detroit, this reaching out to the black community, although I guess the questions were rather scripted, going to Mexico and then giving this fiery, fiery speech in Arizona, very much anti-immigration. Are there certain issues? The guest we had on before, who's a Trump supporter, said he really needs to concentrate on the economy and on Hillary Clinton and on excessive regulations. And if he steers to those issues, he could win this election. Do you think so?
Well, you know, I think it's likely going to come down to the focus on Hillary Clinton. He's such a unique candidate in our history that and seems so disqualified and implausible on a lot of dimensions that what he really needs to do is on the one hand clear some basic bar of qualification himself, but really to a larger extent I think he needs to disqualify Clinton. And you know, as much criticism as the Republican Party has come in for putting Trump up as the nominee, The Democrats are equally culpable in all this for not being able to field anybody who was going to beat him decisively.
It is, when I think about it, if you had another candidate, if the Republicans had put up one of the other candidates, the many who were on that stage, not all of them, but they probably would have been doing very well against Hillary Clinton right now.
I think that's right. I think, you know, Hillary Clinton is obviously a very smart person who has spent many years in public service. There are many good things you can say about her, but she seems pretty clearly to be a very bad politician. I mean, in 2008, to have gone from the place she started in to losing badly to someone who at the time was a one-term senator from Illinois with no other experience, and then in 2016 to have to fend off a pretty serious challenge from Bernie Sanders of all people, this is not her forte. And, mm-hmm. and so the combination of just not being very good at campaigning, plus the frankly somewhat bizarre set of ethical challenges, not just the saying that the cover up is worse than the crime. I think at this point people take less issue with the fact that she had an email server than the year and a half now of just lie after lie about the email server that we're still being subjected to. And that leaves people just scratching their head and really trying to figure out just what kind of judgment does this person have.
So you have that happening with her, and then with Donald Trump you have a whole host of questions, probably number one of which is basic qualifications, to say nothing of how nasty the guy can be on the campaign trail to all kinds of people, which makes you wonder, do you want that kind of person as president? So you have these huge unfavorability for both candidates, and it still makes me wonder, Orrin, what's going to happen on Election Day? I wonder if there's going to be a very large turnout in this race, or what happens when you don't like either candidate very much?
Well, I mean, what's going to happen on Election Day is one or the other of them is going to win.
I guess so. You're right. yeah.
And, you know, the enthusiasm for the two candidates is going to be a factor in that. I think, you know, Donald Trump has a core, obviously, of very enthusiastic supporters, but then is also depending on an awful lot of people who are going to be reluctant to pull the lever for him. Clinton, it's not clear if she has very many enthusiastic supporters, but she has probably a lot more people who are going to be enthusiastic to be voting against the other guy. And so, you know, voter enthusiasm can come in two flavors. It can come in actually really liking someone and actually really disliking the other person. That's one thing campaigns talk a lot about,
yes.
Right, is driving up the negatives of the other person. That
mm-hmm.
can be just as effective a way to get the voters out. And so it'll be really interesting to see, as Election Day approaches, whether people are just fatigued by the length of this process and are just numb to something like how outrageous a candidate Donald Trump is, or when they realize, wait a minute, there's actually an election in a few days and Donald Trump might actually be our president, that can also have a very motivating effect. I think it's tough to predict that in advance.
Mm-hmm. So people would vote for somebody because they're very worried about the other person. They can vote for somebody without much enthusiasm because they're worried about the other person.
Oh, absolutely. And if you think about the strategies that campaigns pursue, and when you talk about negative campaigning and going negative, you know, a huge part of campaigning is both discouraging other people's supporters from supporting them, but also getting your own supporters really scared of the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that has always been the case, and I think given the character of the two candidates this time is obviously going to be a very core part of the playbook.
We have a ton of phone calls, and I do want to get people involved, so let's go to some phone calls. Sandra in Mount Pleasant, thanks for waiting. Sandra, hi.
Oh, hi. I have some distrust issues with Donald Trump, and I'll just pick three. When we talk about the offshore money problem, well, we won't know if he has it or not until he releases his tax returns. We know that he makes his products overseas, but and second, people say he's in favor of small businesses. What about all the small business people that he scammed out of the agreed upon contract money that they worked for him and then couldn't take him to court because it would take too long and too much money? And then I don't respect him hiring David Bossie, who's been after Clinton his whole life, even to delve into their Christmas card list and Fox, their cat, trying to find something. And George H.W. Bush condemned David Bossie for his filthy campaign tactics. Oh, this is ugly.
Yeah, it is ugly. Oren?
Well, you know, I think Sandra actually highlights one of the interesting challenges for the Clinton campaign and for anyone running against Trump, which is which angle do you pick, right? I think she just picked two very potent lines of attack on Trump, that he refuses to release his tax returns and that he obviously treated a lot of his business partners very poorly. But then you have other people who want to focus on claims about, you know, his purported racism or xenophobia, and you have other people who want to focus on his misogyny and his treatment of women, and you have other people who want to focus on just his basic irrationality and wild temperament, and you have et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, one thing I think the Clinton campaign has really failed at is providing a clear focus that they want everyone to focus on and talk about. I mean, with Clinton, and everyone kind of jokes about Trump adding those funny adjectives to people's names, but we know what Trump thinks. It's crooked Hillary Clinton, right? He's focusing on the fact that she's not trustworthy, that she lies about things, and that is pretty much everything we hear about Clinton. Whereas for critics of Trump, there's almost too much to shoot at, and as a result, I think it has weakened the impact of any given line of attack.
Oh, that's interesting. Are we going to see his tax returns before the election?
Oh, I can't imagine we would. For two reasons. One is because if they didn't have anything really damaging in them, he would have released them by now. And the other is because it's not the focus, right? I mean, if he releases his tax returns, it's not like there are now fewer things to criticize him for. And in fact, you see almost no focus on the tax return issue today. And so it's hard to imagine why that would suddenly become the focus, or why he would suddenly respond to the pressure now.
Isn't it ironic, Oren, that one of the themes of this whole election, the insurgent candidacy of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump to a certain extent, addressing the issues, and I think rightfully so, that a lot of people are ailing, they're hurting, they need to make more money in their paycheck, and instead you've got these two candidates. That big story in the Post yesterday about Bill Clinton getting this $18 million deal from a for-profit laureate international universities to give a few speeches, this alignment with these very, you know, moneyed people to make money yourself, and some legitimate question about whether or not you were using your office for your own personal gain, which of course you can, and then Donald Trump, who's, you know, funneling money from the Republican committee into Mar-a-Lago and to increasing the rent on Trump Towers for campaign. You've got people who are so moneyed and so into making more money, and yet the very message that Americans were sending was, you know, we need some relief. It just strikes me as ironic that that's who the candidates are.
It's a little bit odd. You know, the reality is that people who have been very successful in life and turned to national politics in their 50s and 60s are likely to be fairly wealthy.
Wealthy. They're really wealthy.
Well, they are certainly to the wealthy end of that, but I think Trump and Clinton actually paint two very different pictures in that respect. Trump, you can believe he's either been a successful or unsuccessful businessman, but at the end of the day, he has a private sector fortune. And so I think what turns people off to Trump is less the fact of his wealth and more the other elements of his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Clinton, really, you know, the way that they've made their money is what is so off-putting. And when you look into, you know, everything from the type of speaking tours and checks that they were cashing to things like this college so-called presidency, you know, no one is saying you can't go on the speaking circuit or you can't go take an honorary role that pays a lot of money. But I think people would like to see some semblance of decency in what choices you make, whereas with the Clintons, it seems to be a combination of just wanting more, 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 no matter what, and having just absolutely horrific judgment about what is and is not appropriate or acceptable.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the Trump story yesterday that he pays the attorney general a campaign donation, and it turns out she was thinking about joining New York State in looking at fraud charges against Trump University. And lo and behold, after the donation of $25,000, which was illegal because it was coming from his foundation, was made to her, she decided not to look at fraud in Trump University. So it's there too, right?
Yeah, that's a very strange story itself. Again, both it raises basic questions about the judgment of the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And leaves you scratching your head and saying, of 300 million people in this country, how are these the two we're left with as the next leader?
More phone calls momentarily. Orrin Kass is with us, this last portion of All Things Political, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to John in Wisconsin next. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm a Donald Trump supporter because I was born in Los Angeles in 1954. They didn't have any freeways there. They didn't have any immigrants there except for the ones that actually had a permit to come over and sick. And I've seen Los Angeles turn over into Mexico because of the immigration that Ronald Reagan allowed everybody to come over the borders into California. I went in the Marine Corps in 1971. When I got discharged honorably, I came back to the San Fernando Valley, and they kicked in affirmative action. I could not get a city job, a state job, federal job, police officer job, any kind of job that would give me the amount of money to earn to be able to afford a house. They went from $33,000 for a three-bedroom house to $133,000 by the time I got out, and the inflation cost because of the input of immigrants coming into Los Angeles area, equity was rising $6,000 a month. There was no way I was ever going to live my dream after serving my country because of what big interests are doing to our country. And that's why I'm a Donald Trump supporter.
All right. Thanks for your call. Orrin.
Well, I mean, there was certainly a lot there. I think if you were to talk about what has happened in L.A. over the last 60 years, it's been an incredible story of economic dynamism and growth. And certainly immigration has been an element of that. But, you know, the fact that home prices were rising so quickly isn't because of the immigrants. It's because that's where so many people who had a lot of money, frankly, wanted to live. And I don't know what to say exactly about the fact that he couldn't find any job, but it sounds like he only listed government jobs. Certainly there are many jobs out there as well that are not working for the government. So, you know, I think certainly there are real policy problems that he referenced and that good policy would help fix. Unfortunately, I think if he actually looked at what Donald Trump is promising to do, it wouldn't really address any of them.
One more phone call. Lori in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm sorry. I don't normally need to take issue with you, but I really do about the story regarding Trump. The Trump Foundation, its donation about 3 years ago to the Attorney General of Florida,
right. Ms.
Bondi. I mean, this story, it's interesting. The question needs to be asked, why doesn't this story have legs? If someone were examining the Clinton Foundation and discovered that something similar had happened, that would be the smoking gun that everybody's been searching for but cannot find.
All right, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time. Orrin.
Well, you know, I think, again, this goes back to there just being too many lines of attack on Donald Trump. If the Clinton campaign wanted this to be what we talked about Donald Trump, they could focus on this. But, she just gave a speech calling him a racist. Now she's giving, you know, another speech focusing on the economy, et cetera, et cetera. There are so many lines of attack on Trump, and that's why no single one ends up becoming the focus. Whereas with Clinton, it's emails, Clinton Foundation, emails, Clinton Foundation, emails, Clinton Foundation. And that's a lot of what explains why some stories get oxygen and others don't.
Thanks, Lori, for the call. And Oren, thank you so much for being with us. Join us again. Now it begins in earnest, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. Oren Cass, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, Domestic Policy Director of Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2011 and 2012. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and to KP as well for on-air work here in our studios in Milwaukee.